Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition podcast, a podcast focused on training for endurance activity. I'm Sarah, a registered dietitian and toddler mom in the Washington, D.C. area. I write the blog Bucket List Tummy and focus most of my work on running and endurance athletes, as well as merging the principles of sports nutrition with the principles of intuitive eating.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and fellow toddler mom in Pensacola, Florida. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help athletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad to have you here and would appreciate you spreading the word or sharing this episode or podcast with a friend, family member, training partner, coworker, or anyone you would think would enjoy it. If you have a minute, please leave us a review wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as that really helps the show. Now let's get to today's episode. Hey everyone, today Sarah and I are tackling the top 11 fueling mistakes that are common in endurance athletes. We see these all the time in athletes we work with, and maybe a few we've committed ourselves. We've touched on a lot of these myths over the last 19 episodes, so some of this may not necessarily be new info to you, but a lot of the myths that we tackle are ones that we tend to ignore until they become a bigger issue or put on the back burner. This is our last episode for season one. We are taking a short break while Sarah is on maternity leave and will return with new episodes sometime in the fall or early winter. Thank you so much for making this first season so awesome. We still can't believe how many listeners we have, and it's all because of you. We plan to still do our monthly raffle, which is for those who leave us a review. We so appreciate you taking the time to type up a short review for the podcast, and this is our way of saying thank you. So each month we choose one random review, and that reviewer can have a free 30-minute call with either Sarah or myself to really talk about all things nutrition that they want to address. There aren't any specific guidelines there. It's whatever you want to talk about. So leave a typed up review, not just those stars, and you'll be hopefully selected during our monthly raffle. Also, if you are struggling with sports nutrition and really don't know where to begin, even after listening to the podcast, we created the Nail Your Nutrition Endurance Fueling Course, filled with 10 plus modules of all the info you need. Everything from macro distribution, hydration and electrolytes, tips for vegetarians and vegan athletes, nutrients of concern for female athletes, Red S, and tips for pregnancy and postpartum and more. You get access to videos, handouts, and our private Facebook page with direct access to us to ask us questions as you work through the course at your own pace. We know working with a dietitian one-on-one isn't feasible for everyone, which is why we created this course. Head to the show notes to check out the course. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Hey, Sarah, how are you?
Hey, Marita, I'm well. We are recording on the last day of July, which is crazy.
Oh my gosh, this month flew by.
I know. How are you doing?
Good, good. Just hanging in there. Still no childcare, but we are making it work. So how about you?
I have so much respect for you and all of the people without childcare. We're using childcare for now. I don't know how long we'll stay with it, but it's helping just to get everything done before maternity leave comes and before we have this huge transition. We're trying to get by. I think we're starting to nest a little bit, cleaning up.
That's so exciting. Yay.
Yeah. And we have a really fun episode for you guys today. We figured it would be helpful. It's almost like a cumulative episode, wouldn't you say, Marita?
Oh, for sure. We definitely reference our older podcasts in our course in here, but it's a fun conglomerate of everything we talk about.
Yeah. So today's episode is all about the fueling and training mistakes that endurance athletes make. So again, we've probably talked about these in other episodes, but we figured it would be helpful to have them all in one place. So let's start with the reader question today. Today's question is, and it's pertinent to fueling, as always, do I really have to wake up an hour early to eat before a long run? Marita, what's your take on this?
So I would say yes. Most people don't have a stomach of steel and cannot just wake up, eat 15 minutes before they head out the door for a long run. Plus, if you don't eat before, you're kind of playing catch up during during your run. Like, yes, you can start fueling immediately with a gel or a chew or whatever it is you normally use for your fuel, but you're not going to stock those glycogen stores before. So you really want to think about having some kind of breakfast at least 30 minutes. And so let's say you're going to go run for 60 minutes. Yes, you can definitely have, you know, just a banana 30 minutes before and see how you feel. But more than likely, you probably need a little bit more than that. So I would say give yourself at least an hour. So maybe time to do some dynamic warm-ups, have a little bit of water, go pee in the bathroom a couple of times, have some breakfast, get ready, feel really awake and really good for that run and ready to go. What would you add, Sarah?
I would agree. I know this reader is probably hoping to hear something else because, you know, in the summer months, you're already getting up super early before the sun rises and to get done before the heat. But you have to think about how you're going to feel after. And if you've been fasting for the night, your glycogen stores are either depleted or on their way out. So you really do want to eat something. I mean, if you have a less sensitive stomach or a pretty strong stomach, maybe you can get by with waking up 30 minutes before your run and eating something, whether it's like a couple waffles or some juice and fruit or something that you know you can handle. But most people might need a little bit more. We're also assuming this is like by long run, I'm assuming anything like 10 miles or more. So normally that's going to be over an hour. If it's under an hour, you probably can get by without, but I'm erring on the side of long run here, getting it done before it gets too hot, assuming we're in double digits, training for a marathon. You really do want to get something in there. Like Marita said, if you skip that, you're just going to be playing catch up, and every gel you're taking is just trying to equalize what you're using, and your body's not going to be as efficient, and your recovery is also going to be stunted. So probably not what you want to hear, but we are always a fan of thinking ahead, and food helps with that.
Yeah, and we get it. I mean, I live in Florida. I know how hard it is to wake up before it gets hot and humid, but it's just something you have to kind of deal with eating before. It's just a necessity for sure.
And there are other ways, like if you don't want to chew or have anything too heavy like liquids, you could do a smoothie. Just make sure there's enough calories and carbohydrates in there. There are some electrolyte powders, but again, you have to make sure there's carbohydrates and calories in there. And you probably want a little bit of protein. Everyone's going to be a little different, but this is the time to practice.
Yep. Yeah, I know some runners will wake up and then go back to bed. They'll eat and then go back to bed.
That's true. I've heard that too. I've had a few clients that I'd say just set an alarm, eat a Clif Bar, and go back to sleep or something like that.
I don't think I could do that, but if that works for you, then that's something to try. Yeah.
Once I'm up, I'm up.
Exactly. Same here. So before we dive in, we want to give you a reminder to leave a review for us. We so appreciate you guys clicking those stars and actually taking the time to type out and leave us a review. That's how the podcast gets more audience and helps us. We definitely consider this a labor of love. There's a lot of work behind the scenes of a podcast, which you guys don't see, but it's a lot more work than we thought, I would say. Would you agree, Sarah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
we enjoy it, but it's a lot.
Yes, we love it, but it's a lot to do. So if you guys can take the time to leave a short review for us, we would so appreciate it. And for our appreciation, we offer a monthly raffle. So if you take the time to leave a typed up review, we select from those each month, and then you can have a 30-minute phone call, totally free, no obligation, no pressure, with Sarah or myself. So we are going to select for July, and then we'll just keep doing this as long as we can. So please leave us a review. We so appreciate it.
We do. It's actually, it makes my day when I do take the time to look at them. Like today I signed on and it'd been a few days and there was like two or three new reviews and they just make me smile. They're so helpful feedback for us to know what you guys like and what's helping you. So thank you so much. Also, if you are looking for another way to support the show, we have a new Patreon page and the link to that is in our show notes. So if you just click the link in the podcast of however you listen to podcasts, you can get to the show notes page. We also break down episodes in that page as well. But with a Patreon, you can get access to exclusive downloads, freebies, and our course discount that we offer for select patrons as well. And we talk about that course a lot. So if you're interested in learning more, just head to the link in the show notes. And with that, let's get started with the 11 fueling and training mistakes we see.
All right, number one, skipping fueling workouts that are over an hour. I've been seeing this a lot lately with my clients, just on social media. I've talked about it on social media. A lot of people think that they don't need to fuel those workouts that are over an hour, but that is actually the cutoff that we want to encourage you to start fueling. So that hour mark is pretty much the timeline we give for when your glycogen stores, so your stored glucose, stored carbs, start to run low or deplete. Obviously, this can vary slightly depending on the athlete. Maybe it's shorter, maybe it's longer, and it does depend on how trained you are. And it also depends on the last time you ate and then how much glycogen stores you actually have. Generally speaking, though, any workout longer than an hour, you should be fueling, and you should be fueling within the first 15 minutes of starting that workout. It's okay to need fuel for workouts under an hour, too. Let's say you're going to go for a run at 4 p.m. You haven't eaten since lunch at noon. You kind of feel hungry. You don't really want to eat something right before you go for a run. Maybe that bothers your stomach. So have a gel. You know, even if it's just a 3 or 4 mile run, if it's under an hour, that's fine. Go for it. Also, if you tend to deal with low blood sugar, maybe you have type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes, or you just feel tired or hungry, take that gel with you. There's no shame in that. You need those calories to support your training.
The second training mistake we see, and this kind of goes hand in hand with skipping fuel, not getting the recommended 30 to 90 grams of carbs per hour. Now you're probably thinking 30 to 90, that's a huge range. Yes, it is. It depends on what kind of athlete you are, right? So if you're doing like half marathons, even marathons, you can probably get by with the 30 to 60 grams of carbs per hour range. But if you're going 3 to 4 hours plus, the recommendation goes up to 90 grams of carbs per hour, whether you're doing triathlons, ultramarathons, anything like that. And some runners or athletes just feel better with more carbohydrates per hour. I know on our episode with Laura Norris, the running coach, she talked about how much better she felt and performed when she was taking in more gels per hour than she used to. So again, that's something to experiment with. That is the recommendation. So you will have to find and personalize the fuel to yourself. But again, as Marita just mentioned, not taking fueling during exercise is a major mistake. Carbs are our quickest energy source. So that's why the recommendation for during exercise is always carb related. So whether it's intentional to not fuel or unintentional, maybe you're not planning, or maybe your route went longer than you planned, or it took longer, or you got lost. That's definitely happened to me before.
Me too.
You will notice a difference if your muscles have that access to a continuous energy reserve, meaning you're taking in fuel consistently. You run out of glucose or glycogen, you hit the wall. I'm sure many of us have felt that way before. It can also lead to low blood sugar, which has many side effects for exercise. It can be dangerous for some people, but it can also affect cognition, concentration, things like that. So fuel is important.
Number three, not eating before and after a workout. If you're someone who suffers from having zero energy during your workouts, maybe you can't hit those paces, your coach subscribed, you feel like you have to walk every couple of minutes, you just feel like really sluggish, like your legs are full of lead, you might not be eating enough before and after your workout. So just like we've been talking about, your body needs that energy to power through that workout. What you want to think about is aiming for a pre-workout meal that is lower in fat, protein, and fiber, which we're going to talk about with the next mistake, because these slow digestion. So you want to choose things higher in simple carbs like bagels, pancakes, toast, waffles, oatmeal, and fruit. You want to think about having a full meal 1 to 2 hours prior to starting your workout, just like we talked about with the reader question. And then if you're going to go over 2 hours for that workout, consider topping off with 15 to 30 minutes before with about 30 grams of carbs. So a gel, a piece of fruit, some honey, or a handful of low fiber cereal, and then make sure that you are refueling that workout 1 to 2 hours after ending it. We do have another mistake for that one, just to go like a little bit more in depth, but the longer you wait, the more you compromise that recovery, your muscle repair and resynthesis, and your immune system. So you want to make sure that you are really taking care of fueling before and after that workout.
The next mistake we see probably more often than people would think is eating fiber, fat, or protein heavy meal or snack before a workout. So this is for all of you with maybe sensitive stomachs, or you've gone out for a run and experienced that gut or GI distress. Another great resource for this would be going back to our episode, I believe it was episode 6, where we talk about runner stomach and other GI issues when training. But just to recap, like Marita just mentioned, too much fat and protein, what it does is it slows digestion, which if you're aiming for satiety and staying full for a long time is a good thing. But right before exercise, it kind of counteracts. It slows the efficiency of carbohydrates. And since it takes hours to digest, it just sits in your stomach. So your GI system is pulling your blood away from the muscles to try to digest this, which it's kind of a push and pull experience going on, and it's uncomfortable. The blood flow really wants to go to your muscles because you're exercising and they need it. But at the same time, your gut wants the blood flow there to help with digestion. So it just does not feel well. Add on top of that, that running, especially as a high intensity, there's a lot of jostling going on. That can also be uncomfortable if food is just sitting in your GI tract. So it can cause dysfunction and damage. About 88% of gut blood flow is shunted away from the gut to the working muscles during exercise. So you can imagine there's not much there to help with digestion. So again, what we've been saying in so many different ways is just aim for a low fiber, easy to digest carbohydrate option before exercise. Some symptoms that you may experience that may suggest to looking or revising your pre-workout fuel may be upper GI symptoms like heartburn, belching, nausea, abdominal cramps, or even lower GI symptoms like diarrhea, urgent bowel movements, side aches, stitches, things like that.
Yeah, and it's kind of the opposite of what we tell clients to do for the rest of the day, right? You want to have protein, healthy fats, and fiber with those meals and snacks. But when you're thinking about pre-workout stuff, it's definitely the opposite, so you can avoid all of these issues. And we have 2 episodes all on GI distress and how to fix that. It's episode 6 and 7, like Sarah mentioned. Okay, let's talk about mistake number 5, not drinking fluid before, during, and after a workout. So when you wake up for your long run, ride, swim, whatever it is, it's really tempting to think that you're hydrated from yesterday before that morning workout, but you definitely become dehydrated overnight and absolutely positively need to hydrate before a workout, even if it's just a short one. Our daily water losses are from respiration, GI, renal, and sweat, of course, right? And sweat losses contain things other than just water. They contain those electrolytes that we have a whole episode on. And those are sodium, potassium, magnesium, and calcium. How much water you need per day really depends on your body size, composition, age, physical activity, your training levels, those environmental conditions that we talk about. And athletes really likely need more than the recommended 8 cups a day. The average person can sweat about 1 to 2 liters an hour. But this really, again, depends on genetics, environment, and exercise conditions. It also really depends on how trained you are. So newer athletes who are maybe getting back into it after being injured or just starting to run or whatever else it is, definitely sweat more. When you sweat, fluid balance is regulated to stimulate thirst and reduce water sodium excretion, which means the need to pee is reduced. Thirst is also a really unreliable indicator of fluid needs during exercise because, one, you have distractions, right? You're not really thinking about how thirsty you are when you're out running and trying to complete that run and hydrate and watch for cars or other people, things like that, right? So thirst signals may be missed or ignored. Fluid may not be readily available when you need it. So maybe you ran out of your handheld water bottle and you're not near a water fountain or a park or you're too far from home. So that's one way that you don't have any other fluid. And then physiology of the body. Your body has a lot of fluid to lose before we even start to perceive thirst. So yes, when you are thirsty, that does mean that you are already dehydrated. So thirst really is not a reliable indicator of fluid needs during exercise. So what can you do? During the day, you want to aim for half your body weight in fluid. And notice I said fluid and not just water, right? So what counts for fluid needs? Water, fruit juices, sports drinks, unsweetened coffees and teas, fruits, vegetables, soups. Before exercise, you want to drink 16 to 24 ounces 1 to 2 hours prior to a workout over 60 minutes. And this can be a mixture of water, sports drink, just water, whatever works best for your GI system, and consider your climates too. If you're going to be going out for a long, hot summer run, you probably want to have some of that be some sports drink. And then consider topping off 15 to 30 minutes before with another 8 ounces, especially if you live in hot, humid climates. During exercise, you want to aim for 0.4 to 0.8 liters an hour, or somewhere around 12 to 24 ounces of fluid. And I know 24 ounces of fluid sounds like a lot. I would say that's probably more for those who are cycling. I feel like 24 ounces an hour running would be a lot of fluid.
When you're running, it's harder, and holding it is harder.
Oh yeah, that's way harder. And maybe also consider that if you're like an ultra athlete or an Ironman, like if you're really trained, that's something to aspire to.
Or you're a salty sweater, or it's super hot and humid. Yeah. Backpacks help with that. That's my best way to stay hydrated.
Oh yeah, for sure. And maybe also too, I should include this, if you have like an all-encompassing drink, so like Infinite, Tailwind, and you have to have the 24 ounces because that's your carbs, electrolytes, calories, then that is maybe a little bit different because that's not going to necessarily hit your system so much that you have to pee every 5 minutes. So okay, and then after exercise, aim for 16 to 24 ounces of fluid for every pound lost. So this is probably the one time I would say you should weigh yourself. You know that we're not huge fans of the scale, but if you have found that you are constantly dehydrated, you're maybe a really salty sweater, maybe it's really, really toasty outside and you just feel really depleted lately, weigh yourself naked right before you go out for your workout and then weigh yourself again when you come back. Again, naked. And then you want to have that 16 to 24 ounces of fluid for every pound lost. And this helps you achieve rapid and total recovery from dehydration. And again, I know that sounds like a lot of fluid, but you really want to make sure you try to get that within the 2 hours after ending your workout. And again, episode 8 covers this way more in depth. We have a whole episode on hydration for summer workouts, and we have a whole module of this in the Nail Your Nutrition Fueling Endurance course.
And actually, the feedback we've gotten from our course participants is that this was the most helpful module. I think it's because, A, there's a lot of numbers Marita just mentioned, right? Like before, during, after, how many ounces, how many liters, how much should I be weighing? And what about electrolytes? Like, This is really, really complicated. So working one-on-one with someone with a hydration plan is 100% recommended, but our course kind of breaks it all down. We have handouts, we have graphs, we have suggestions for if you're sick of water or what fuels would be best to take with water versus all-inclusive fuels like Marita mentioned that have carbohydrates and other things as well, because there's a difference if you're getting carbs and electrolytes in with your water or if it's just water alone. So check out the course if you're confused or you need help with hydration, because this is definitely one of the biggest struggles among athletes.
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated than you think.
Okay, next fueling mistake, only focusing on protein for recovery post-workout. If you need more insight on this one, we do have a whole episode about post-workout fueling. I believe it's episode 4, but I will just recap that for you here. So in that episode, we discuss that protein, yes, it is important for post-workout. However, it's also important for every meal and snack throughout the day. So what's most important for recovery and protein is really having consistent protein throughout the day. But also when we talk about post-workout, I want you to think about carbohydrates and water as well. So the carbohydrates and protein together are essentially what help rebuild your muscle glycogen stores, resynthesize those amino acids, those proteins that will help with your muscle, and both together are going to help stop or stunt the protein breakdown process, which happens when you're exercising. So we want to turn some of those things off, but we want to also initiate muscle building. We want to initiate the glycogen restoring in our muscles so we can exercise the next day, or maybe you have 2-a-days or whatever your exercise plan looks like. And we also want to improve our blood sugar and have energy and get nutrients and antioxidants and things like that. So both carbohydrates and protein are important together. Try eating every 2 to 4 hours. If possible, include something with protein throughout the day. So this could be as easy as pairing your snack with nuts or cheese. So maybe you're used to having a piece of fruit and raisins, trail mix, add something with some protein, nuts, cheese stick, yogurt, anything like that, protein smoothie. Varying your protein sources is a great way to get a mixture of all amino acids. I know we talk a lot about leucine, which is a specific amino acid that helps with muscle growth. We talk about that in episode 4. And if you're interested in learning more about plant-based proteins, we actually talk with sports nutrition expert Kelly Jones. She's a plant-based expert. We talked with her in episode 15. So those are some other resources to check out.
Mistake number 7, skipping electrolytes during workouts. When we sweat, we lose water and electrolytes, so replenishing them is crucial. You lose more sodium than any other electrolyte while sweating, so you really want to focus on replacing sodium the most. Other electrolytes that we lose are potassium, calcium, and magnesium. Electrolytes are minerals that have an electric charge, and they exist in your blood, tissues, and body fluid. So why do we need electrolytes during activity? They help the body maintain normal fluid levels. Electrolytes help to balance pH level, remove waste out of your cells and nutrients into cells. They balance the amount of water in your body and ensure that your nerves, muscle, heart, and brain function properly. Electrolyte deficiency can be one of the main causes of muscle cramps. And when you tinker with those electrolytes, it can be kind of like the missing link that you might be searching for if you feel really depleted during workouts, if you're not recovering well, if you're not seeing performance gains. A lot of athletes tend to forget about electrolytes. They just think about, I need to get this many carbs or this many calories an hour, but it's just as important to get those electrolytes in. So what can you do? You want to pick a sports drink with electrolytes, or a gel or chew, whatever it is you like to have with electrolytes, if you don't want to carry water and a sports drink. Yes, you do need to carry water as well as a sports drink if you are not going to get enough electrolytes with your gel or chew. So I know that can be pretty cumbersome considering trying to carry 2 water bottles or a pack or a backpack, things like that. So you kind of need to decide, do I want to pick a gel that has a lot more sodium that I can rely on that for just my electrolytes, or do I also want to carry a sports drink and, you know, choose the gel that has a little bit less electrolytes, but one that I like better? You want to aim for 400 to 700 milligrams of sodium an hour, and then about 50 to 80 milligrams of potassium an hour per activity. And then during the day, you want to think about replenishing magnesium. And the recommendation for women is 300 to 350 milligrams. And for men, that's 400 to 450 milligrams per day. Some research suggests that endurance athletes can safely consume about 500 to 800 milligrams daily, mostly because a lot of research shows that endurance athletes are pretty magnesium deficient. So again, if you find that you've been struggling with performance and recovery, that might be something to look into. And then for calcium, if you are between 18 and 50 years old, you need about 1100 milligrams per day. And then if you are above 50, that goes up to 1200. We cover this way more in depth in episode 10. So if you have questions about all of these numbers and all of these things we're throwing at you, check out that episode.
The next mistake is not eating enough carbohydrates. And I see this in just my daily life with many people because there is this huge fear of carbohydrates based on the culture we live in or low carb diet crazes or what have you. But if you're an athlete, you need carbs, and you don't just need a regular amount of carbs. You likely need more carbs. If you're feeling sluggish and fatigued all the time, you may not be eating enough in general, but specifically, you're probably not getting enough carbohydrates. Remember, carbohydrates equal energy. You can just call them energy if that helps you mentally, but they are the quickest form of energy for our body and our brain. So what you eat in the form of carbohydrate really gets rapidly converted to energy for you to use for exercise. Carbs are also the nutrient that affects our blood sugar the greatest. So if you're tired or fatigued, your blood sugar is probably low. You probably need some carbohydrates to bring that up. For sustainable energy, we want to eat carbs consistently. We do want to pair them with other macronutrients. There's a reason that the recommended range of carbohydrates is 45 to 65% of our diet. And again, that's for the general population. For athletes, it's generally higher than that percentage. Just because of all of the carbohydrates you're expending to get through exercise, but also all of the carbohydrates you need to prepare and replenish for exercise. And remember, carbs include so many foods. We're not just talking about baked goods and pizza. We're talking about whole grains, fruits, vegetables, dairy, cereals, anything like that. Carbohydrates make up such a large portion of food, so if you have it in your head that you can't eat XYZ, I guarantee there's plenty of other ways to meet carbohydrate needs. And also, I would want to break down why you have those food rules in the first place. Back to the issue at hand, though. We burn through carbs quickly with exercise, general activities of just living. You get out of bed and you brush your teeth and you go downstairs to make coffee, you're expending energy. So just remember, it's not just exercise related. Each meal and snack should have a carb source. That's an easy way to think about it. Whether it's a piece of fruit or a bun on your burger or some rice paired with your entree, whatever that looks like for you, try to include a carb source, at least one carb source at every meal or snack.
Fueling mistake number 9, waiting hours to eat after a workout. So we've talked about this a little bit already, but let's go a little bit more in depth. If you're waiting 3-4 hours after your workout to actually have a meal, you are not doing yourself any favors. So let's break that down a little bit. Your goals of eating after a workout are to replenish glycogen, again, that stored form of carbs, so your muscles are topped off before your next session. This is especially important if you are going to be running or working out consecutive days or 2-a-days. It also helps to reduce muscle protein breakdown. So studies show that muscle protein breakdown is only slightly elevated immediately post-exercise. So that's really when you want to take advantage of that and have some sort of meal, which we'll talk about in a second, right after your workout. Another study found that after 3 hours of not eating after a workout, net protein balance may decrease by as much as 50%. That is a lot, folks. So you want to make sure that you are eating within 1 to 2 hours after finishing your workout. And then also protein synthesis. So that's really one of the biggest goals. You want to make sure you're building those muscles efficiently. I think we all want more muscles to make us run faster and stronger. So definitely a huge goal for eating after a workout. What should you be eating, though? You want to have carbs and protein. Why carbs? Cells are sensitive to carb intake after exercise, so your muscles can actually rapidly uptake that glucose and promote glycogen storage. They're like primed to grab onto the glucose in your blood. They're like, oh yes, give me some of that glycogen. And then replenishing glycogen stores are really a key objective. And then adding protein to a post-workout carb meal can actually enhance glycogen resynthesis, and it can help improve that net protein balance, i.e. replenishing your lost muscles, your depleted muscles, and making sure that you are recovering well. Studies have found that consuming a protein carbohydrate supplement in the 2-hour period following a 60-minute cycling bout resulted in significantly greater glycogen resynthesis compared to those just having carbohydrates. So you want to make sure that you are having both. For protein, you want to aim for 20 to 30 grams total, and then try to get at least 10 grams of branched-chain amino acids in there if you can, just like Sarah mentioned with leucine. And adding more protein does not necessarily mean that's going to be better. Our bodies really can't process over 40 grams of protein at once. So you really just want to make sure that you're getting 20 to 30 grams of protein and then a good portion of carbohydrates too. Episode 4, again, talks about this way more in depth. So if you have questions and you want specific recommendations, check out that episode.
Great. Okay. The next mistake, I'm sure we've all made this one time or another, but this is kind of what we say to new runners. Don't try anything new on race day. And at the same time, make sure you're practicing your fueling before race day. So not practicing your fueling before race day would be the mistake here. We all have different gut tolerances, as we've talked about today and also in previous episode. And there's really no way to know what you can and can't handle unless you test it out. Yes, we have general recommendations, avoid high fat, high fiber, maybe stick to white bread rather than whole grain bread, or a simply an easier to digest carbohydrate, but we all are going to be different. This goes for hydration, fueling, pre-race meals and snacks too, even the night before a race, what you're eating. I typically tend to eat the same thing. I know Marita and I have talked about this before. I like pizza. I also tend to do, if I'm doing like a pasta or sweet potatoes, those are kind of my other carbohydrate sources. I tend to do a chicken, an easy to digest, plain chicken type thing with it. But you're not going to see me eating a ton of broccoli or high fiber vegetables the night before a race. However, for some people, it might not bother them. Again, you don't need to overdo it on whole wheat everything and try to stay away from an array or lots of vegetables, especially cruciferous or raw vegetables, if you're sensitive to fiber. But again, if you've practiced that meal, you know you can handle it. Maybe it works for you before a race. Also know that different gels, chews, powders, they all have different ingredients and sources of sugars. So someone may tolerate glucose, but not fructose, or vice versa. Maltodextrin, there's just so many different sources of sugar in these that since we are all individual, we may react to them differently. An episode to check out would be our gut health episode. We also have episode 7 where we talk about FODMAP foods and different ingredients to look out for if you are experiencing adverse symptoms. Just know that you may tolerate some of these better than others. All in all, we just want you to take the time to practice to train your gut because your gut can be trained. It's a big myth that you're stuck with what you have. You really, research does show that if you take the time to practice fueling, your gut can adapt, which is really exciting. And it's just another reason why our bodies are so cool. But if you practice fueling with different alternatives, and I'm not just referring to practicing the week before your race, I want you to do this numerous times, several times, different distances, different weather. You want to make sure that you're really sure that your stomach can handle this and get to know what best suits you. We do also have a free download of different gels and chews and how to take them. So what ingredients are in them, how many electrolytes they have, and whether you should take them with water or without water. So if you head to our show notes page for this episode or even just our podcast notes in general, you can grab that download.
All right, last mistake, number 11, overdoing it the night or day before a big run race. So kind of in the same vein of what Sarah was just talking about. So you know that it's important to top off your glycogen stores leading up to your race or maybe just a big run so that you're ready to go. But this is definitely something that you should be doing for 1 to 2 weeks prior instead of just the night before. Yes, you still want to have a big portion of carbs before that big run or race or whatever else it is you have going on. Maybe you have a big long bike ride. But this is something that you should be doing pretty consistently, especially if you have been working at this for a long time and you know that you want to have carbs pretty much with every single meal and snack and not just the night before and have a huge meal, a huge bowl of pasta and think that you're going to be good. Fatigue occurs when glycogen levels get too low. This is when you hit the wall or bonk during a race or a long workout. Research has shown that carb loading can reduce fatigue and improve performance by as much as 2-3% for exercise lasting more than 90 minutes. So I would say that anything like half marathon and above would probably count towards that, maybe even a 10K for some people. So if you know you're going to be working out for more than 90 minutes, you probably want to think about having the majority of your food come from carbs the night and the day before of your workout. Having a big meal with a ton of carbs or a greasy or heavy meal can really make you feel terrible and have to run to the porta potty way more than necessary on race day or during that long workout. So instead of trying to have one big meal, trying to cram it all in the night before, you want to aim to have carbs with every meal and snack for at least a week leading up to your race. Since you're running fewer miles during that taper leading up to that race, the glycogen will slowly accumulate in your muscles. At this point, you want to have about 85% of your calories coming from carbs. And I know that sounds like a lot. And I know this might be difficult for some people who maybe have food rules of I have to have a vegetable with every single meal. I have to have a certain amount of protein with every single meal. This can be really difficult to just have the majority of your plate come from carbs. So if that's something that you need to address, that's 100% something you should be working on with a sports dietitian. The night before, go with something you're used to eating, like Sarah said, before your long workouts. Include protein, go light on the fiber, and light on the veggies. So some of our favorite things, like Sarah mentioned, are pizza, pasta, lasagna, a baked potato with chicken, and rice with salmon. Before my last race, before my last Olympic triathlon, I had spaghetti and I said no to the salad and lots of garlic bread. So that's just one example of what I like to eat before a race.
Yes, garlic bread. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. I just want to touch on something Marita said, because this is actually when we're working on a marathon nutrition plan with my athletes. We really focus on that week, sometimes even a week and a half of carb loading. So it's not just the night before or 2 days before. I mean, even loading that soon before a race will probably have some benefit for increasing your carbohydrate stores. But if you're talking about bloating or physical symptoms, it might not be very comfortable. So if you start the week before, you're giving your body a chance to adjust. And again, it's a slow, steady build. A lot of people during this time also get really scared if maybe they weigh themselves constantly or they're looking at the scale and it's going up and up and I want to assure you, A, that this is nothing to worry about, but B, if you need the science behind it, carbohydrates store extra water in our muscles. So a lot of that weight is water weight. So your body is really smart. It's preparing you. It knows you are going into quote unquote battle. That's what I tell my athletes. And it just wants to be prepared. It wants to have these reserves, right? So it's helping you with hydration too. But again, slow and steady. And if the idea of eating so many more carbohydrates seems really impossible, or where do I even start? Start small. It might just be if you're having rice or quinoa for dinner or tacos, like have an extra flour tortilla. And maybe you're eating a little bit less protein. That's okay. We're not saying you have to eat more in general across the board. So maybe the proportion of protein and fat you're eating goes down a little bit. That's okay. It's not going to harm your nutrition. Your body is really smart and it knows that the focus right now is carbohydrates. So maybe it means a little larger portion, or maybe it means adding a nighttime snack in after dinner, like some cereal or a glass of milk or some juice or an extra juice box or something, or the fruit applesauce things that my daughter has that I steal from her. Those are easy, like 60 grams of carbs right there. So it doesn't have to be drastic, but we want to understand. And I think also the last thing I'm going to say about this is it will depend on your goals. So if you're not interested in reducing fatigue or improving performance, you don't have to listen to our carb loading recommendations. But if you do have goals of getting faster, or you're trying to not hit the wall this time around, or you want to try something different, there is research for carb loading.
Yeah, it definitely does help you feel a lot better. And maybe that's been what's been missing in your training and why you always hit the wall at mile 20 or just feel terrible during training. So that's something to consider for sure. All right, that wraps up our training fueling mistakes. We have 11, of course, because we had to do 11. Our sports nutrition myths episode was also 11. If you have something you want to add to this that we can answer for you, please let us know. We'd love to have it as a reader question. Thank you so much for listening today, guys.
Bye.
That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!